And good morning. Welcome to the program. Hi, this is Dr. Morgan. This is Health Essentials. I just managed to grab the microphone and I broke the whole thing off of my hand. So I'm trying to see if I can get it back on here. Okay, I know. I mean, sure, I could hold it the whole program, but if I have, let me tighten this back up. All right, bear with me. What is the deal here? Okay. This is not going well this morning. Great. Okay, you didn't see that, but I knocked my microphone off, and I knocked my headphone off, and they fell to the floor, and it just collapsed. So that noise that you just heard, that was all me. Okay, we're going to start over again. Hi, this is Roy Morgan. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. Okay, there's literally an endless amount of information that I can give to you that you might find very encouraging. I think that people want options. I think the whole idea of going to a medical clinic and then having them say in response to your problem or to your symptoms that they just want to watch and wait, and then retest in 6 months, and this whole 6 months you don't have answers and you don't have any clear focus. There's no strategy on what am I going to work on? What's your plan for helping me? There's none of that. And so I don't think people really want that. I think they want to know, what can I do to help myself? How am I going to get better? Give me a plan, and preferably a plan that's non-toxic. So many times when you, and I'm just going to say, when you're a large group of people and somebody stands up and, for example, let's just say church service. When they start asking, who needs prayers, you'll see a lot of hands go up, and that's justifiable. Because it's good for us to pray to God and ask for help. I mean, when I read the Bible, I mean, don't you get the idea that humbling yourself before the Lord is a good idea? But so many of the people that I see raise their hands or that speak up, they've got really significant health problems and they're suffering. Well, I want to do everything that I can to give you an idea of maybe something that you could prayerfully consider. And even if all you do is just write down one or two points that I make and just do your own research, today it's super easy. I think I've told you before that back in the early 1980s when I was in school, we had what was called the Dewey Decimal System. I realize there's going to be a portion of the population, they do not know what that is, but I'm telling you, it is challenging sometimes. I know some of y'all, you can walk forwards and backwards on multiple levels of the library and go into the farthest corners where nobody's ever ventured and find what you're looking for. But sometimes it took a long time to put together research, like months. Now you can do that in 3 seconds. Not 3 months, but 3 seconds. You could type in almost any topic that you want. And let's just say, for example, what do I do to treat a cancerous tumor? Well, you can read all the medical literature, but you can also look up medical literature where they've studied herbs. Or in the case that I'm going to give to you this morning, there is a very specific type of a mushroom called the reishi mushroom. It is spelled R-E-I-S-H-I. I think I'm saying it right. Reishi? I don't think it's reishi. Reishi mushroom. Okay. Well, I came across this, and I found it very interesting, and I'll try to just give you the small tidbits of information about it, but if you wanted to, you could easily look that up and research it, get on your laptop, your computer. For most people, that's probably the phone that you carry in your hand. You could just look up all these articles and find out, is this actually accurate? Well, they did a very unique animal study, and I think it has something to say about the benefits of reishi mushrooms. Here's the title of the article. This comes from Plus One, the year 2013. So that was 11 years ago. I think it said the month of August. Okay, almost 11 months ago. And published in European Journal, 2013, February 28th. Okay, almost 11 years ago, as in four more days. Anyway, the title of the article is this: Anti-Tumor Effects of Ganoderma Lucidum, which is the same as the Reishi, in Inflammatory Breast Cancer in Vivo and In Vitro Models. And you're probably wondering what that is. When it says it's in vivo, that means they actually probably injected breast cancer cells into a living organism, like a rat or a mouse. Does that make sense? If it says in vitro, that's more like they put the cells in a test tube, and then they compare compounds against it. Both ways, you can learn something from them. Okay, here's a study right here, 2013. Researchers from the Universidad Central de Caribbean in Puerto Rico, that's still a United States territory, they published an animal study in Plus One, in which they injected mice with breast cancer cells of a relatively rare type. Okay, this is an inflammatory breast cancer. Inflammatory breast cancer cells produce a very unusual number of proteins that are involved in growth and metastasis. And what that means is, this very rare breast cancer, it releases these chemicals that cause the tumor to grow and to spread all over the body. So to me, I find this interesting. I'm going, all right, here's what we're going to do. You're going to cause mice or rats to have cancer, and then you're going to try something to see if it can help alter the course of it for the better. Okay? So half of the mice were given reishi mushrooms daily, orally. I don't know how they did that because I didn't look that up, but I'm just going to guess they probably mixed it into their Purina mouse chow or their mouse food. Does that make sense? Okay. The researchers used a Pharmanex, that's a company. There's a product they have called Reishi Max. So they probably found a way to mix up some rat food, get it in pellet form or whatever form they had, and give it to the mice. And so if they ate the food, they were getting the reishi mushrooms. Here's one point that you might find interesting. The amount that they gave them would have been the equivalent if you weigh 154 pounds. Let's just say that you're a tall woman, you weigh 154 pounds, it would have been about 2 grams of reishi mushrooms. So if the capsules were 500 milligrams, that'd be 4 a day. Does that make sense? Okay, much research has already been done into the biological effects on the human body and on animals of reishi mushrooms. Now, this is what I find interesting also. This may be like a side point, but I still think we could take this a number of different ways. The literature suggests that they have an anti-estrogenic effect. Okay? There's a lot of cancers out there that test to be estrogen positive, which means you have a high expression of estrogen, and it's like pouring gas on a fire. You're telling the tumor or the cancer to grow as fast as possible. And so they found out that when they gave reishi mushrooms, it had an anti-estrogen effect. And I thought, well, maybe that's one potential mechanism that you can tell the tumor, slow down, stop growing so fast. I know this is technical, but there's certain polysaccharides in reishi. But they also say that it contains a compound called triterpenes. And the one that they mention is called ganoderic acid. I have not read anything about that. But almost any time that you read the word terpenes, that's the active compound that's in an herb or a natural substance that usually has a strong effect on the human body for the better. Okay, here's the results right here. Supplementation with reishi mushroom could not prevent the cancer cells from developing into tumors. And so you get the gist here. They take a very aggressive inflammatory form of a breast cancer cell, and they inject it into mice, and they're saying the reishi could not stop the injected cells from growing. Okay? In the mice that received reishi, the tumors grew less quickly. They were smaller in size, and at the end of this experiment, they were less heavy, which means they just didn't weigh as much as the tumors. And, of course, you can't see the chart that I'm looking at right here. But what happened is when you gave reishi versus the rats or the mice that didn't have the reishi mushroom extract, I mean, the tumors just grow so rapidly, but the reishi helps keep it at bay. This is one article that I can actually see pictures of the tumors. I'm looking at them. And to me, it looks like the tumors where there was no reishi mushroom, it looks like they're about 5 to 6 times bigger. I hope I don't think I'm reflecting any inaccuracies here. But the mice on the reishi mushroom, these were like so much smaller. Okay, supplementation with the reishi reduced the amount of proteins called Ki-67. When you have less of Ki-67 in a mouse, that means you don't get tumor growth. Okay, I'm looking at the pictures. I actually have a visual here. You can't see that. But it's just so interesting that all the compounds in reishi, they slow the metastasis. I kind of like the idea of a person giving themselves a chance to heal. Give your immune system a chance to fight and do its job properly. So just prayerfully consider reishi mushrooms. Okay, in the tumor cells of the mice that received reishi, the activity of the molecules that stimulate anabolic activity was less than those in the animals in the control group. Now, one point that I want to make here. I know this is going to sound unusual to you, but let me just have a go with this. What is it that a cancer or a tumor needs to grow? What's the criteria? Well, I mean, I kind of deal with these day in, day out because I think about them a lot. But if somebody goes to the oncologist and they're given chemotherapy and radiation, quite often the oncologist will say, I'm really concerned about keeping your weight on, so I want you to consume milkshakes and banana splits and hot fudge sundaes, and please eat plenty of cookies and cake. You need lots of sugar because we need to keep your weight on. Or I've heard other oncologists say, drink plenty of beer, eat as much food as you want. Does it make a difference what I eat? No, just eat whatever you want. Well, that's not a true reflection of accuracy. But anyway, everybody understands by looking at research that cancer cells love to eat sugar. If you take what's called high fructose corn syrup from like a soda water or from eating candy, what do you think a tumor does with that? Do you think it grows more efficiently, or do you think sugar directly is toxic to the tumor? Does eating a candy bar, does that kill the tumor? Well, no. So I think we get that. But this is some of the interesting research of the last 10 years that I just find so fascinating. You know, if you took a pulse oximeter, they cost, what, $17 or $18, you know, off the internet. And you can put it on the end of your finger. You can hold it close to your heart. That's what I believe is probably the most accurate way to measure the percentage of oxygen that you have at the tip of your finger. And let's just say it reads 98% oxygen saturation. You'd go, well, that's good. Yeah. Or if it was 99 or 100, that'd be good too. What's not good is one that starts to dip below, you know, 95. That means your body's not holding as much oxygen. And that's one of the keys to all cancers and all diseases. They need low oxygen. The tumor itself, when they've actually, and I know I'm sort of using artistic my imagination here, when they take a human being that's very vital, that doesn't have cancer in their body, usually their body is completely saturated with plenty of oxygen. That's why I've never understood why we don't use hyperbaric oxygen treatment for every human being that's sick. I think they kind of reserve it for the wound care centers that can't get the wound to heal. I think they'll do it under those circumstances. But I have not heard that routinely they take cancer patients and they place them in a hyperbaric oxygen chamber for the purpose of trying to saturate their body with oxygen. Now, the very nature of a tumor, if I can say it that way, is it thrives in a low oxygen environment. I'm trying to think that a tumor They don't want their oxygen saturation being at 98, 99, 100%, like on the tip of your finger. They don't want that. If you look at the oxygen levels inside of a tumor, it's usually around 40%. I think one article said it might have been 30 to 40%, but I'd have to look that up again. But it's not like living healthy cells that you and I can conceptualize in our minds. We want to have a rich amount of oxygen, just like at night when you sleep. This is when your brain resaturates itself with oxygen. That's one of the purposes of sleep. So when a person doesn't sleep at night, what do you got? You got a problem that's developing. So cancers need low oxygen. Okay, well, what does that tell you? This is not rocket science. Could you imagine what would happen with people that walk every day or exercise every day? Do you think their oxygen levels are low, or do you think they're more optimal? Well, optimal. Cancer cells need inflammation. That's why I like this study about inflammatory breast cancer cells and reishi turning that off. Inflammation is what drives cancer. Do you know also, almost all the studies are showing correlations between low levels of energy of a human being and the tendency to develop cancer. Okay, well, we better fix your energy. Okay, what else did I want to say about that? That might be a little bit much. Anyway, you want to kill a cancer? Give your body lots of oxygen. How about that? Okay, one more right here. This one I liked very, very much also. One of the inflammatory markers that you can ask your doctor to test you for, super easy, it's called C-reactive protein. Sometimes it's just given the abbreviation capital C, capital R, capital P. So if you know this week you're going for a lab test or you're going for a yearly physical, you know, 1st of March, you might write down C-reactive protein. I think that's a good one to measure because it gives you some reflection of what inflammation is doing in your body. How's your immune system doing? Well, there's a marker right there. Do you have high levels of C-reactive protein that's wrecking your arteries or destroying the heart? Might be good to measure that. So when you have low levels, when you have lower levels of C-reactive protein, that is one indication that your body's in better working order. So if you had a C-reactive protein test and it comes back at 13 or 14, there's probably going to be a red letter beside it with a red H for high. That means it's out of its range. Okay? Well, listen to this right here. Okay, this is an original research article. It comes from, well, I'm not going to read all the names. They're Canadian names. I can't pronounce French names. Anyway, the article says, changes in purpose in life and low-grade chronic inflammation across older adulthood. Here's a study. Canadian psychologists at Concordia University followed 129 adults that were between 63 years of age all the way up to 91 for 6 years. The researchers used questionnaires every 2 years to determine how meaningful the study participants thought their lives were. The researchers also determined the concentration of the inflammatory protein C-reactive protein in the study of the blood in the study participants. Okay, are you with me? A lifestyle that lowers the concentration of inflammatory protein, such as CRP or C-reactive protein, it reduces the risk of premature death or chronic disease. When I say chronic disease, could we just insert maybe cancer, arthritis, chronic infections, diabetes, heart disease, dementia, cognitive decline, Alzheimer's? You get it. The researchers wondered whether psychological factors also play a role in the activity of inflammatory proteins. And they suspected that experiencing meaning and purpose in life reduces C-reactive protein concentration. I mean, you know what I'm talking about. I mean, you've seen people that wander around going, what's the use? Life has no meaning. I don't have no reason to live. And you've got other people that all day long they wake up super happy, that they get to run toward. How can I do this or that to bless and help other people and also help myself or help my family? Okay, here's the results. The youngest 25% of the study participants, that's age 63 to 73, their inflammation decreased significantly when they had purpose in their life. And I promise you, even though we're not here to talk about that, I guess, in great detail, your life is supposed to have a purpose. It's supposed to have a meaning. I mean, you were created for good works. I think that's in Ephesians. Okay, it says, however, now this is what they said, and I always want to give, you know, when you're trying to reflect what a study says, you got to give the good and the bad, right? Okay, well, I don't know if this is bad, but this is what they said. They said, however, the oldest 25% in the study participants, those 81, well, and the other ones up into their 90s, when they had purpose in their life, they said there was no longer any effect on the concentrations of C-reactive protein in the blood. Now, I've got the chart in front of me that shows the graph. And it shows that C-reactive protein, it really does significantly go way, way down when you're between 63 and 73 and you have a purpose to your life. Now, I'm looking also at the graph. It shows C-reactive protein levels at the start of the study for those that were 81 years old up to 93. And it says there's really no benefit, but it doesn't worsen at all. It's almost like a straight line. And so I'm curious, what would happen? It doesn't have the other aspect of it that I wanted. I wanted them to show me the stats on the people that said life has no meaning and they were 93 years old. They didn't do that. So isn't that interesting how God's designed everything? When you have purpose in your life, life is good. Okay? All right, if you want to join me on the radio this morning, there's a phone line open, 903-589-8507. And I'll be happy to take your phone call, and I'll do my very best to answer the questions you have. But, yes, I'm quite biased, which means I really like to think of things that are really good for the human body. Let's find a way to nourish a weakened tissue. So, for example, what if somebody says, my kidneys are weak. Well, what do we do to help nourish them, to give them a chance to heal? Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. Hoping you can help me figure out if something's going on. What are some of the reasons that you can have an unexplained foot pain that comes and goes?
Well, it may not be unexplained, but for example, there's a compound in the human body called uric acid. In women, when uric acid starts to go above the number 5, I think that's about 5.5 for men, then they start having pain that comes and goes in the foot.
Okay.
And so when uric acid starts going up quite a bit higher, like around 7 or 8, that's when you got chronic pain in your big toe or your foot, and that would be called gout.
How do you build the uric acid?
Well, I'm going to play this both ways. Uric acid is a normal compound that your body makes. And your body actually makes uric acid to act as an anti-inflammatory or an antioxidant. So we know that stuff like vitamin C or vitamin E, those are antioxidants. They protect your body from rusting or have an oxidative damage. Well, your body produces uric acid to do a similar thing, but it's up into a point. So if the human body is not in great repair, if there's inflammation, that would be a reason why your body might make more uric acid. But if your body's trying to right the ship, or is trying to heal or correct a tissue that's inflamed. I know that sounds kind of technical, but does that sort of make sense? The gatekeeper of uric acid, for the most part, is going to be the kidneys. And so just think of this. If the kidneys are like a... Have you ever... You know how your husband tells you he wants you... It's time to change the oil in the car, and you crawl under there and change the oil, and you pull the oil filter off, and it's all dirty? I'm just joking. Or like if there was an air filter on an engine, and you go, well, we haven't changed the air filter in 38,000 miles. Maybe we should look at it. You can't be surprised if when you pull it out, there's like about a million flies or dragonflies or wasps, or it's just completely saturated with dirt. And you go, gross. No wonder I'm not getting great gas mileage. And so you go get a brand new clean filter and you put in there and you go, what do you think? The car's running better all of a sudden. It's the air's cleaner. But your kidneys, they act as a very precise filtration system. And it's supposed to keep the uric acid levels at bay. So if the kidneys get clogged up, if they get dirty, if they become sluggish and weak and worn down because they're working too hard, that's where uric acid starts to go up. So you can have very unusual pains that come and go in the feet if as a sign that maybe the kidneys are struggling at keeping uric acid low. Now, that's one way. There are foods in nature that just totally will increase uric acid. One of them is high fructose corn syrup, and I just seriously doubt that's what you're doing.
Correct.
I mean, are you drinking soda waters like Pepsi every day that's full of high fructose corn syrup?
No way, Jose.
Oh, you're fluent in Spanish, are you? That's good to know. But yeah, you're not consuming high fructose corn syrup in the form of sugary treats and sugary drinks. So the biggest one is going to be either black tea. It's called orange pekoe tea. When that ferments, it makes a lot of uric acid. So a lot of times when a person has a lot of foot pain, you might look at switching from black tea to drinking more like an herbal tea. And that could be hibiscus tea or dandelion, something like that. There's only a million herbal teas out there to choose from.
Yeah, no, that would not be the issue. I only take a cup of coffee, 2 cups of coffee in the morning. And have you heard of the Life Boost? That it
no.
is low acid and there's no, it's like no mold or it's, anyhow, it's a special company that.
Yeah, I'm not for mold in coffee. That's horrible, isn't it?
Yeah, anyhow, it's supposed to be, the healthy. A healthy version of coffee.
Oh, and I really appreciate what you're doing. You're trying to make the best decision to help your body. I like that. When it's around 4 o'clock in the afternoon, do you notice that your energy kind of takes a dip?
The reason I drink coffee in part is because it helps me with energy.
Well, but specifically at 4 o'clock, is that one of the times that you feel like, oh my goodness, if I just sat down, I'd probably fall asleep?
I can say that is true.
Okay, well, it's usually somewhere between 4 and maybe 6 to 7 p.m. That's usually the time that your kidneys are at peak efficiency. They're doing their greatest amount of work at filtering the blood and making all the different compounds. And so maybe I'm tying the two together. If a person says, you know what, I feel really tired, like I'm wiped out at 4 o'clock, to me, that would be one sign that maybe that's another clue the kidneys aren't working as well as they should. That's all I'm really trying to say.
Sure.
I asked, can I tell you a story from this week?
Sure.
I won't tell you the woman's name because if she's listening, I don't want her to think that I'm divulging her information, so I won't use her name. But a woman about a year ago was in kidney failure, okay? Mm-hmm. Numbers looked horrible. And so what she did was she said, what can I do? And I gave her a plan. But anyway, I think she came in one day this week for a different reason. I think I've seen her like a couple times over the last year. But when she brought her blood work in, it showed that her kidney function was perfect. Her GFR was at 99. That means the kidneys are working at 99% efficiency. To me, that's perfect. There was no markers that showed stress on the kidneys. And I asked her, I said, okay, what is the reason why you healed? And without breaking missing a beat, she said, cherries. And that was just her answer because we've talked about that before, that cherries, they have a unique anthocyanidine flavonoid compound that when you eat them, they help rid the body of inflammation. So you may have heard before that when people have foot pain or they have gout, that eating cherries, it has some benefit to your kidneys and your body in helping scrub the uric acid crystals out.
Oh.
Have you ever heard of eating cherries before?
Cherries before?
Yeah, from you.
Okay.
Go get some cherries.
So you're going to have to give me more clues to figure this out, though, because I don't have enough information. I mean, I'm more than willing to help, but I'm just guessing at this point.
Well, I listen to you all the time. I try to eat clean, so I have checked my diet. I have checked drinking, lots of fluids.
Well, and that's why I switched gears and I started focusing on the kidneys, because I wanted something to trigger a thought inside of you to start thinking about your kidneys.
Uh-huh.
So I would say is, number one, it's really, really good that you've been doing everything within your power. But the reason I switched to talking about your kidneys is I'm trying to get you to get the idea that maybe there's something else that you're missing.
Yeah.
And I want to point toward that so we can start asking questions about that. So sometimes it's not what you're doing. It may be that there's been damage to your kidneys. So like if you go to a doctor and have, when's the last time you've had like a blood test for a physical or something like that?
A year or so ago.
Well, go back and look at those numbers. And for example, look at the one called GFR. If that says 100, then that's excellent. Most likely there's nothing to talk about. Look at your creatinine levels. When creatinine levels start to go above 1.1, that means the blood's getting dirtier and dirtier. And there's a lot of markers to look at, but just look for the ones that are normal. I mean, as far as you know, were your labs normal and perfect?
I have the thing in front of me, the EGFR, no African American, 65.
That means you have very, very significant damage to your kidneys.
Ooh.
Well, and I'm not saying that to shock you, but I mean, that's what that means. Your kidneys are only working at 65% efficiency. That's not what you want. You want them to work at 100%.
Correct.
And so that tells me if your GFR is 65, you're 5 points away from stage one renal failure.
Oh, my.
Well, I'm not doing that for the shock of it. I mean, I'd just rather call it like it is. And so that's one marker right there at 65. There is very significant damage to your kidneys. I will not accept any other plausible explanation.
Okay.
But and the reason I say that is because I have doctors say to the patients all the time, that you're in kidney failure, but I wouldn't worry about it. It just doesn't even make sense. Well, what would a doctor be concerned about if he's not concerned about that? Did your doctor spend any energy talking to you and coming up with a strategy to restore your kidneys?
Absolutely not.
Okay. So is there anything else besides that particular number?
What else do I look for? I have it in front of me.
Well, you're looking for things that are either low, out of the range, they're less than what they should be. What?
What is ALT?
That's a liver enzyme. So you've got ALT and AST. Those are liver enzymes.
Okay, that's 67. It's all red.
Okay, well, what that means is you have a very significant swollen fatty liver. Your liver is infiltrated with a lot of fat. And so your kidneys are one of the filters of the blood, and your liver is another major filter of the blood. And if I say they're all clogged up, I don't think I'm being inaccurate, and I'm not trying to be mean. And so if you only wait until your body's dying, you know, you're in your deathbed to take action, then that's too late.
Okay.
And so you have a fatty liver. If you want to call it non-alcoholic steatohepatitis, that's NASH, that's a good term.
Uh-huh.
And so you've got a lot of moving parts with this. So the other thing that I would just, and this is a guess on my part, have you ever heard of the hormone before called insulin?
Yes, sir.
Okay. When insulin levels are much significantly higher than what they should be, above a healthy level, then it tells your body to start depositing fat in the liver. Another way of saying this is your main fat storage hormone in the human body is insulin.
Yes.
And so I have to assume that your insulin levels are high. So if they did a marker called hemoglobin A1C, and that's like at 5.6, 5.7 above, that means you've got insulin resistance. But I don't need that. I've got your ALT or AST is elevated. That means there's a fatty liver there. That means under your present circumstances, your body's doing everything it can to stuff as much fat into your liver. And that ain't good.
Mm-hmm.
So there's damage to the kidneys. There's significant damage to the liver. Is there any other markers that are on there?
The hemoglobin, red blood cell. I have the blood work in front of me. I just don't know what to look for. I have the MCH. It's on red, 26.5.
Yeah.
Hematocrit is 46.8.
Do you know what that means? That means your blood is super thick and dirty.
Okay.
I did use the word super. Maybe that wasn't appropriate, but I'm just saying for a woman, you want the hematocrit being somewhere around 40. And so, for example, when the hematocrit is at 42, if it goes from 42 to 46, you double the risk of having a heart attack. And what's happening is your heart and cardiovascular system, they have so much more stress on them. They're trying to push blood through arteries, and the arteries are probably not really dilated and open like they were, you know, when it wasn't this way. So your heart's having to work a lot harder. And when you have a lot of fat that's built up in the liver, the liver doesn't exactly filter and clean and do its job so well because there's so much fat in there. And it just makes your heart and your circulatory system work harder. So one solution is donating blood.
Okay.
So if you went to Carter Blood Care and said, I'd like to donate a pint of my blood so I can help save lives, that'd be true. And they'd be doing you a favor. So that's one idea from what you're telling me.
Okay. Anything else?
I think you should go to your doctor, and I think you should ask him to explain what is your strategy or your plan to make me get rid of the fatty liver and bring my kidneys back. Because, I mean, there's only so much that I can do on the radio without actually examining somebody to figure out what's wrong. But I recommend you call right now, even though they're not there, and make an appointment. That way you can request, and it's a simple request. Why didn't you tell me what to do about my fatty liver, and what are we going to do about my kidneys, and why is my foot hurting? Oh, well, ma'am, the reason your foot's hurting is because you have your liver and your kidneys are clogged up. But you need to get those fixed.
Okay. Well, I actually have not had a MD for quite a while. I just had I went to a place, got a blood work done. It's a clinic in, but they don't, what do you call it?
Of course, yeah, you need to find one. There you go. That's a good idea. Find somebody that can come up with a reasonable plan to make the fatty liver disappear. And
would you be one of those people or not?
Well, what do you think?
I'll give it a shot.
You know what? Here's the way it is. I can explain to people all day long what to do, but you've got to have the mindset that you're going to follow through and do it. And so here's the way that it needs to work. We need to take this very, very seriously. I think I'd be very foolish if I overlooked anything that you're telling me, because your body is screaming information on how it wants to be helped. But we need to find a way as quickly as possible to rejuvenate your body. I mean, I don't think you want to be diseased. I don't get that from you at all. If anything, I think that you're an amazing woman that wants to be healed and restored where you can function at a high level.
Yeah, it just totally shocks me, not so much because I'm very health-oriented and doing all I hear or trying to do.
Let me ask you this, and I get that, and I respect what you're saying. How would you rate your current energy levels? If the number 10 is just amazing energy, you feel super fabulous, you just want to participate in life, 0 would be the exact polar opposite. That would be like total exhaustion. Where are you on that scale?
I honestly cannot tell you, because I'm functioning I'm working all day.
Okay, well, let's stop it right there for a second. And I realize it's not easy to answer these questions, but is it by sheer force of will that you're making yourself function all day long?
In part, it is.
Okay, well, what do you mean by in part? It's either one way or the other.
As a little kid, I had to work beyond my pay, beyond how I felt.
Okay, so you're telling, this is a whole different ball of wax then. You're telling me you're telling me that you have to literally every single day, you have to go above and beyond and overachieve just to get everything done.
Correct.
Okay, I get that. But that's not really the question I'm asking. I'm not asking you what your force of will is. I'm just wanting to come to an honest, simple understanding of what your energy levels are. And I think what you're really telling me, maybe in a backward sort of way, is you have to literally push to get everything done in your life. I respect that, but I'm just wanting an accurate representation of what your energy levels are. Because when you're just very open with me, that makes it very easy for me to kind of guide you in one way or the other. But I'll just cut to the chase and say this. You've got to have a lot of oxygen and a lot of energy. Do you need too much? No, just the Goldilocks just right. So we have to figure out, how do we get your body back in good repair? Do you know that your liver cells only do two things? Here's what they do. They either convert the food along with oxygen that you eat every day into energy, so they either burn energy or they grow. Okay? The problem is, when you start growing a lot of fat in your liver, that's what leads to cancer, and that's what leads to diabetes, and that's what leads to insulin resistance. So I think there's a lot of moving parts, and if we could just start tackling each one of them. So let me put the rest of this on hold right here. Just forget about the energy level. When you sleep at night and you lay your head on the pillow, how long does it take for you to drift off into a deep sleep?
Usually fall asleep right away.
Okay, do you stay asleep all night long?
I've been waking up just once to go to the bathroom and then go back to sleep.
Okay, that's good. Do you feel refreshed and restored and renewed when you wake up?
Overall, most of the days.
Okay, so when you wake up, what's your energy levels in the morning then when you wake up? 10's wonderful, 0's the pits.
Probably 7.
Okay. Okay, so I think we have to tackle this piece by piece and find out what are you doing and how do we get this tackled. So call a doctor, make an appointment, and ask them a simple question. I need you to help me get my body back in good repair again.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go to your office and see how you get out.
All right. I'll check the phones to see if you call.
Well, if you haven't changed your number, you'll hear from me.
All right. Well, thank you very much, ma'am. I hope you have a really good day.
You too.
Bye-bye. All right. There's a phone line open at 903-589-8507. If you haven't heard the program in a while, the number has changed, so it's 903-589-8507. What do you think has to be done when a person's sick? Well, you've got to retool and rethink everything. What am I doing? What are the parameters I can change? For some people, they just don't have enough time to even think because they're so busy. The demands are so high. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan.
Good morning. How are you, sir?
Well, I've got a couple of concerns I want to discuss with you. I'm a true believer in holistic medicine, and I take very serious recommendations. Number one problem I'm facing is the possibility of melanoma cancer, skin cancer, that's showing up in signs on my chest and a couple parts of my head, like the ears and whatnot. I'm in the sun a lot. That's probably contributing to a lot of it. But I want to get your recommendation on how to attack the problem. I don't want to go through conventional cancer treatments. I don't feel like that's going to work for me.
Now, you do know that melanoma is unlike a squamous cell carcinoma or a basal cell skin cancer. It's a whole different ball of wax.
Well, I may be mislabeling skin cancer per se, you know.
Well, in melanoma, I do take those very, very seriously, and I can almost guarantee you, if you go to a dermatologist, they may need to just surgically cut it off. That's one viable plan. This week, I don't remember which day I read the article, but it was all about vitamin D. You know, D is in David. So when you're in the sunshine, what you have is you have cholesterol under your skin that converts into vitamin D, and that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. I did not read the entire article, but it was talking about vitamin D is extremely protective against skin cancers, but specifically, it was all about melanoma. And so even earlier this morning, I was reading about Ganoderma. That's just a fancy name for reishi mushrooms. Have you ever heard of those before?
I think I've heard you discuss it.
Well, if you went to like a health food store and you saw a bottle and it says this contains Ganoderma or reishi mushrooms, that's something that has a very favorable immune modulatory effect on the body, which means it helps upregulate the immune system. That may be a fancy terminology for it helps your immune system work a whole lot better than what it has been working. I know what I'm going to tell you is not going to be ultra shocking to you, but let me say it anyway. One study that I read that's really, really impressed me is, what is the difference between a person that lives to be 95 years of age and they can drive themselves to church, they can go buy groceries, they can do their own yard work, they can come and go as they please, and they can take care of themselves? No limitations. What do you do with a person at 65 when they die of old age? Well, they're saying now the difference is the 95-year-old, their immune system works about 10% better. And so I think that's valid to talk about. What do we do to help the immune system work better? So vitamin D is definitely a very interesting component. So when I read part of the article about it helping prevent melanoma, I thought, man, that's amazing. Look at what the body can do when you give it enough of the very substance it needs. And so I think the more that I study mushrooms, I was reading an article this morning about men that had very low levels of testosterone, so they didn't feel great, they weren't really motivated. They get a significant boost just from taking a mushroom called cordyceps. Have you ever heard of that one before?
I don't think I have. But
is there room for improvement with your energy levels?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, if you consider the number one effect on a man of low levels of vitamin D is lack of energy. So literally, if you're lacking energy, why wouldn't I consider one of the components that you need to consider is maybe you don't have optimal vitamin D. So that's one avenue. But I really think you're helping yourself when you start considering taking mushroom extracts. Some people have just given up coffee and they consume mushroom coffee. Probably a bunch of weirdos. No, I'm just joking about that. I've done it many times. I like mushroom coffee. So consider prayerfully mushrooms. Anything on the skin, mushroom extracts are really what you're looking at to really help you. Does that sort of make sense?
That.
Yeah.
Also, I do take quite a few different vitamins. In fact, almost A to Z.
Well, that means you're trying to help yourself. Way to go.
Right. As far as taking them, I can pour out almost a handful of vitamins.
Yeah.
And it's probably not a good idea to take them all at the same time, is it?
Well, there's a lot of factors involved. If taking them all at the same time is your one time that you can guarantee that you'll be consistent, then I say that works 100% of the time. Because if you do it another time, what if I said I need you to split these up three times a day, and you tell me after 2 months, well, Dr. Morgan, I only took them once in the morning, and I forgot the other doses. So if that's the time slot or the delivery system that works for you, I'm all for it, as long as you have food in your stomach.
Right. That's important that you have food, because a lot of these vitamins require that.
Yeah, like, would you believe me if I told you that one of the latest studies that comes from Japan, it shows when they measure their blood cell membrane's concentration of omega-3 fatty acids, you know, that's cod liver oil, tuna oil, salmon oil, stuff like that, sardine oil. When they have a higher concentration, around 9.5% omega-3s, they live 5 years longer, without problems than people that don't have 9.5% concentration of omega-3s in their red blood cell membranes. I mean, I can't make this stuff up. I want you to explain to me, which drug can you take that will guarantee me that you'll live 5 years longer without problems? I don't know of any.
Right.
So I would probably say the omega-3 fatty acids, I would probably move that to the top of the list as far as importance. And then the second part of the equation is, it's just a matter of how much you take. And so I'd say somewhere between 3 grams plus is a good starting point.
One thing real quick, if I may.
Yes, sir.
Is my urinary situation. I'm 77 years of age, and I have a constant problem with checking my urinary flow. It comes out very slowly and quite often. So I'm needing a way to get it under control. What would you recommend?
Okay, well, this is not necessarily going to be easy, but let me have a go at it, okay?
Okay.
Sometimes, even at the grocery stores, you can go to the aisle where they sell the weird products called coconut oil and almond flour and stuff like that, but sometimes they'll sell jars of what's called bee pollen. So if you have a friend that raises bees for a living, or they have a hobby of raising bees, you know, a beekeeper, that's one of the things they pull out of the hive is bee pollen.
Mm-hmm.
Bee pollen is very unique in that for a lot of people that consume it orally in the form of bee pollen granules, it has this tremendous effect on healing the prostate.
Mm. Okay.
So that's what. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you're not going to get me to say don't consume some raw honey. I'm not going to do that. I think what you have
that's
is
my preference is sweetness. I stay away from sugar. I absolutely do.
I think you're making a great choice. I know this may sound unusual, but I really like the honey that looks so dark and so dirty, like they haven't even attempted to filter the good things out of it. Because I really think that when you have raw honey, it has so many components. Do you know what I find unusual? When they discover a pharaoh's tomb, I'm going to use the name Tutankhamun for King Tut. When they find his burial chamber where his sarcophagus is, usually right next door to that chamber, they have this room that's filled with things like chariots, statues, but they have all these items that they think that he needs for his next life that he can consume. And one of the things they almost always find is jars of honey. Now, what I don't understand is why hasn't the honey been opened? Never mind, we're moving right along now. But raw honey is a superfood. But like anything else, that's something I think if you take it in moderation. One of the studies that I read years ago was just as simple as this right here. They took 12 healthy men and 12 healthy women, and they measured all their blood values, you know, like doing lab tests, like a CBC with a differential or C-reactive protein, comprehensive metabolic panel, and they just gave them 4 tablespoons of raw honey at the end of the 30 days or the 4 weeks. They redid the test, and every one of them, their labs looked better. That was the only thing they did was different was honey. Honey is one of the greatest healing substances on the planet.
Quite impressive.
You ain't kidding. What I'm curious about, has there ever been like an infection on the skin that honey couldn't cure? That's my question for the day.
That's interesting.
Well, I tell you what, I've seen some things before that I thought, there is no way this is going to be healed, but once they slap some honey on it, all of a sudden it heals. It's amazing. They even use that in wound care now. I think we should start off using that. You know, how would you like to have a wound that doesn't heal? But the situation with your prostate, what I would say is there's several herbs that you probably need to look at. I'd probably look at make sure that you're getting adequate amounts of zinc. I'd say somewhere between 20 and 25 milligrams a day. You're probably already doing that.
Yeah, that's one of my vitamins I do take. Yeah.
There's another mineral that's called selenium. I'd say somewhere between 200 and 400 micrograms. That's NCGs. That's what you're looking for. I think that iodine could prove to be very beneficial also. And maybe what I'm saying is you find that men that have the fewest prostate problems, they usually have a higher intake of iodine. Iodine is a legitimate element that's found in nature, and a lot of times people just get it because they eat seafood. So if you tell me...
Is there enough iodine in iodized salt?
No, there's not enough to do anything in iodized salt. No, you're asking a great question, but there's just not enough to amount to a hill of beans. You're talking about supplementing with extra iodine. And usually the levels that they consume when they have very healthy prostates, that'd be about 12 milligrams a day. I think if you need anything sweet besides one spoonful of honey a day, I would call that berries. And if that's a blueberry, a strawberry, a raspberry, a blackberry, a cherry, those are some of the most nutrient-dense living fruits that grow on the planet that are probably so good for human health. It's just hard to start talking about them and not giving off all the research. But if you said, you know what am I better off by just cutting out all grains and sugar and just eating meat and vegetables and berries, I say yes, if you want to heal. And you do.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the things you could look at. Saw palmetto, African pygium bark. Sometimes I get good results from taking nettle. I know you know what that is, because when you ran as a boy up and down the country roads, you know what it's like to touch a bull nettle.
I've got plenty of it here on the farm. Plenty of stinging nettles.
You mean you're farming stinging nettles? That's a genius plan. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can cook it and eat it, but you can't eat it before you cook it.
That's right. You'll regret it for sure.
I remember one time my nephew Lance flipped off a bicycle and landed on his bare back in a patch of stinging nettles. I've never seen a human being pop up off the ground as fast as possible. It was like there was a spring-loaded catapulting device that made him jump up in the air after he landed on it. That's weird.
Could I possibly make a tea out of the stinging nettle?
Of course you can.
And benefit me?
Of course you can. Some people they'll blanch it, and they'll put it in a dehydrator, you know, like a food dehydrator, and then just pulverize it into a powder in a blender, then put it in capsules and swallow it. I mean, you can, if you got it growing everywhere, you can just make your own. You know what a food dehydrator is?
Yes, sir, I have one.
Okay. It's like a low-temperature hairdryer.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah, you can make your own easily. And if you don't know how, you could always go to YouTube.com and type in, how do I make my own stinging nettle supplements? Other old ways of doing this would be soaking them in some type of alcohol. Alcohol is a solvent. You're trying to dissolve the medicinal properties from the plant. But no, nettle is a great remedy, and in some people, it really helps remove inflammation and swelling from the prostate. So I think that would be worthy of your time to give it a shot to see if that really works well for you.
I definitely will take your advice.
Oh, good. Well, I can't wait to hear what happens to you. This can be very exciting.
Thank you ever so much, Dr.
You're welcome.
I really appreciate you.
Oh, you're welcome, buddy.
I want to make an appointment with you and go visit with you.
That'd be great. Well, thanks for your phone call today. I hope you have an excellent afternoon.
God bless you, sir.
Thank you, and God bless you. Bye-bye. Okay, unfortunately, it appears that we are all out of time today. Thank you for taking time from your busy schedule to join in with me, and I appreciate all the input. And Lord willing, I will return this time next week, and we'll pick up the conversation on more things that relate to how to improve your health naturally.